Okay.
The problem is that I also had class afterwards from schooling, so I would have to leave early every time.
That's
a problem.
That's fine.
Okay. And do you have any lecture notes? Because I missed the first two classes, unfortunately.
They're on the web page, so if you can just download them from the web page.
Okay.
Okay, let's start. How are you all? Good? Bad? Indifferent? Okay, so last week I only managed to get through half of what I wanted to do. So things are a bit awkward because we're now out of sync with the weekly exercises. So some of the stuff that I'm covering in the next few minutes, you may well have already looked at in the exercise. So that's a bit of a crap situation, but I can't do anything about it. And I'm going to go on to talk about arrays in the second half today, which will be more relevant for this week's exercises. But I probably won't be able to get through all of it, but I'll hope to get the most important parts done. Okay, so we looked at if statements and while loops. So So probably one of the things you'll do most frequently in Java this year is use for loops. And let's look at an example. So this is an example of for loop where we've got a variable here, val, set to 1. And we've got some stuff here and then a block. So this I here is called the loop variable. And what we're going to do is take various values of I, starting at 0 and then counting up. And each time we get a new value for I, we're going to do something with it. So last term you did some logic, right? And I think at some point you must have done something with quantifiers, where you say like, for all x, if x is even, then x is not odd. Okay. Stupid thing to say, but it's true. So you've got a quantifier there where you say for all x blah 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 blah, and you've got some domain which you're counting over, say integers. And in logic you can count over an infinite set, right? You can say for every integer n there's an n plus 1. It's also an integer. When you're writing programs, we can't quantify over infinite domains. We have to say, let's do everything for every integer up to n, for some n. And a for statement is a way of giving us a universal quantifier. It's saying, do something for every value, for all x, within a certain range. So we start off with 0, and then we're going to count up, ba-bum, 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 all the way up to n. So I'm assuming here that we've fixed n somewhere else in our program. So n is some parameter, some value that we may have read in from the command line, or we may have set it in a variable earlier on. So let's say n is 33. So this is going to print out I, which will be this thing that goes from 0 up to n. Or equal to n. And val starts off at 1, so we first print out 1, and then we multiply val by 2. So each time through the loop, we multiply val by 2. So it's going to double each time through the loop. And so this tells us what the starting condition is for the loop variable. This tells us what the termination condition is. So while this is true, we keep on going. When it's no longer true, we stop. And this tells us how much to add each time. And this is an increment statement, and it essentially means add 1 to I each time around the loop. So we've got some kind of initialization, which is like the I equals 0. We've got the Boolean expression, which I also call the continuation expression. That's something that's true or false. We keep on going while it's true, stop when it's false, and then an increment statement. And then there's a block of statements in here, and we execute those for each value of the loop variable, which we've initialized here. So this is the shape of it. We initialize I, or whatever it is. We test the Boolean condition. If it's true, we execute statement 1, statement 2. Then we increment I, and then carry on. check whether the Boolean condition is true or false. So there's an example. I'm not sure if this is a good example, actually, but there's this idea here that if you have a ruler, okay, this is, I'm going to do this in inches, although we could do it in metric. So we have these major divisions into inches, and then subdivisions into half inches, and subdivisions of those into quarter inches, and subdivisions of those into eighths of an inch. And this little program prints something out where we can think of 4 as being a major division, and then 3 as being a half of that, 2 as being a half of that, and 1 as being a half of that. So alternatively, we start off with the 1s, and then we aggregate them into 2s, which can aggregate into things at level 3, and then into level 4. And so this bit of program does, in this case, we've got some strings we're defining. So we first define at the basic level something which has got 1 as its value. And then we define ruler 2 by putting together 2 ruler 1s, ruler at the lower level. And then the next level is a ruler, 2 ruler 2s with a 3 between them, and then a ruler 4 at the top level is 2 ruler 3s with a 4 between them. And we then print out, in this case, a ruler 1, a ruler 2, a ruler 3, a ruler 4. So this is kind of recursive because we're building each level from the lower level. And okay, so what we did in this case, we can only do as many levels as we can be bothered to write down these separate statements. So I could do ruler 5 and ruler 6. I could do ruler 5 in terms of ruler 4. Ruler 6 in terms of ruler 5. But I have to enumerate each of them. So what's happening here, we're using a for loop. So I said earlier on that maybe when we do a for loop, we count up to n. And I said, well, n, where does that come from? Well, in this case, n comes from the command line. So we're assuming that we've got some string on the command line which can be parsed as an integer. And we're setting that to the value of n. We start off with ruler being the empty string, and if we go back to what we did before, it's a bit like saying, how can we abstract something which covers all these statements? And what we're doing here is we're going to count I up from 1 up to including n. And in each case, we're going to reset the value of ruler with that new value of I. So we start off with the empty string, then string is consisting of 1, then 1, 2, 1, and 1, 2, 1, 3, 1, 2, 1. And we can go on doing this indefinitely. Well, we can go on do this for any n, and at some point it gets very, very large. So this gives us this shows us how using the for loop lets us repeatedly double the string for each value of n. This is a general procedure for producing all these rulers of different levels. So the general point here is that for loops allow us to replace a sequence of statements that have to be written down one by one with a more general abstract statement which can just be iterated, and we can plug in different values of I, of the loop variable, and then use that to compute new things that we want. So here's some examples, and notice that at the end, when we gave 100, the structure that we built just got too big, and we get a Java runs out of memory and says can't do it. So it gets big quite fast. So here are some examples of loopy things you can do. We looked already at the while case. These little chunks of code are useful to learn because they're like idioms that you can reuse or you can adapt for lots of circumstances. And you can actually get quite a long way just by memorizing these, becoming familiar with them, and reusing them. So we want to compute a sum of from 1 to n. So we do a loop. We've got our initialization. We start with we started with our sum to be 0. We're going to add 1 to it. This little idiom here says sum plus equals I. So that's the same as saying sum equals sum plus I. It's an abbreviation for adding something to a value we've already got. So first time round, sum is going to be 1. And then we increment I to be 2. And so we'll have 1 plus 2, and then 2 plus 3, and so on. And at the end, we've accumulated all the values we want, so that's this whole series, and then we can print out the final value. So that just gives a way of building a sum incrementally as we iterate through the loop. We can do the same thing with time. So this is where we had adding new values. Here we're doing product. So every time we multiply the product we had before by I, so that allows us to actually compute n factorial. What's next? Oh, all right. I thought I had some more. Are any questions about for loops? Yeah.
I think in the third example, the product is supposed to start out as 1. Otherwise, the sweep always
starts at 0. That's a great point. Don't start off with your product as 0. otherwise, you'll end up with 0. Yeah. So that's a really bad mistake. Something to avoid. Thank you for noting that. Any other questions? There's nothing set in stone that says that you have to go up to and including n. So you might go to, your condition might be less than n, or it might be less than equals to n divided by 2. We don't necessarily have to start off at 0 or 1. We could start off at, say, 10 and actually count down. So the increment statement here, instead of doing addition, could do subtraction. So we could start off big and go down. And you'll probably come across examples of those quite soon. Yeah?
What about for loops that increment through every entry in a structure?
We're going to come to that, I think, in the second half today. So just hang on a bit. OK, so this was meant to be, it's not quite what I wanted. It's meant to be your typical Scottish guy who's just wearing a jacket when it's pouring down with rain or pissing down with snow. So this is meant to be Scottish weather. It's less than minus 5 degrees. You should maybe put a sweater on. If it's below freezing, then maybe it's a bit nippy. If it's like now, then it's normal. And if it's more than 10, well, it's roasting. So this is my little program for delivering a verdict. So we've got some variable temp, and we assign a value to verdict depending on the value of temp. So this is going back to if statements. So if it's this, then wear a sweater. Otherwise, if it's less than 1, then it's nippy. Otherwise, if it's less than 11, it's normal. Otherwise, it's roasting. Now, we've got embedded if statements there. In fact, we can simplify that to this, where we don't have to embed this else inside of brackets. So this looks more like a case statement. Notice that it's only nippy if it's not less than minus 5. So that means if the temperature is greater than or equal to minus 5, then it's nippy. Oops. So here's a case where we've been a bit sloppy. We wanted these to be mutually exclusive alternatives. So if I give, say, a temperature of minus 3 to this program, what will the output be? Sorry? Normal, yeah. So there may be cases where you want to do that, but in this case, you have to actually have the else statements in, because you want this to mean it's less than 11, but not less than 1. So that's why we need the else's in there. So summary. I think you probably got this already. So we've got if else, while loops, for loops, revise lab slots, which are on the web page. This is been and gone. That's, I think, I talked about already. So let's move on. So arrays in Java. So you can think of arrays as being a bit like lists. So you've come across lists already in Haskell. So arrays are like lists in the sense they give you a way of storing a series of values. But there are a number of important differences. You can think of arrays as being more primitive than lists, so they're a more basic data structure, a little bit closer to the way the hardware works, I guess. And you can think of each of the cells as being something like a memory location, though not exactly, but it's more like that. So we've got positions in this array or list-like structure, each of which has an index. And the indexes start at 0, which is really important and confusing and can always trip you up. So here's a case where we have a list of names. So these are Scottish names. Apparently the 100 most popular Scottish girls' names in 2007. So if you guys out there, you should learn these probably, because you might find them useful. And learn to pronounce them as well. So examples of things you might want to store, playing cards, people, characters, audio samples, nucleotides. In principle, we could store these things as objects in an array, but actually we'll run out of memory where Java's currently set up. So it's a sequence of values which are indexed, and they all have to be the same type, so we can't have some strings and some integers in an array. It has to be all strings, or all integers, or all doubles, or all booleans. Now, supposing we decided we wanted to have lots of variables of type double, one way of initializing them is we have this declaration, and then we have all these assignment statements. These are initialization statements. They set them all to zero, and then we have some more statements which give them values. And then we can use them here, x equals a4 plus a5. This is very boring. So, better way of doing that, we create an array of doubles, and this is done with this line here. So this is your first encounter with objects. So an array is a kind of object, and this says we've got an array, it's called A, and it's the things inside it, the elements are of type double. This says make a new one, and this says it's got to be length 10. I'm going to store 10 elements in my array. So an important thing to notice there is we need to say exactly how many elements we're going to store. We need to know in advance. So this is a limitation of arrays, but it means that they can work more efficiently because Java can say, all right, I only need this much memory. If you didn't declare the length, then it wouldn't know how much to reserve. It could say, I'll take a guess and then add more, but it's more straightforward and more efficient to just say, bang off, here we've got 10 elements. And you can't add more. And then we can add or assign variables to those elements. And that's how we do that, using these statements. So it's just as easy to make an array of whatever it is, a million variables, as 10. But it'd be a lot more hard to list a million, assign a million variables using the first method, obviously. So this gives us a huge efficiency gain. So here's a picture of an array. We've got indices here. These are meant to be where the elements are stored. So this is an array of length 5. Important thing to note is the first index is 0, and the last index is not 5. It's 5 minus 1. So to get the fourth element, we actually need to look at the index, the element at index 3. Basically, this is all you need to know about arrays. I mean, if you can get your head around this, then you're just about done. So to make an array, we have to declare it. So that's a declaration. This creates a new array of length 10. This is what we've called it, array of ints. To access an element in it, we use this notation, the square brackets with the index in there. So here's another example. We've set n to be 10. We've declared the array of doubles. We've initialized it, or created it rather. And this puts elements into that array. So each time we go around the loop, we're getting a new index. And each time around the loop, we get a new index, we put 0 in. So this is initializing all the array elements to 0. Actually, we don't need to do that. So if we just use this statement, this will do all that work for us. And in particular, it will put zeros for all those integer elements. So we'll get all those elements initialized to 0. It's like having all our variables set to 0. And depending on the type, we'll get different default values. So if it's an int, it's a 0. If it's a double, it's 0.0. Booleans get initialized to false. And strings get initialized to a special object, which is null, which means no value for an object. So strings are objects too. Any questions on that? Yeah.
If you append a declared but not initialized variable to the end of an array, will it initialize it when you add it to the array?
Can you just, repeat that?
If you declare a variable and then append it to an array, will it initialize when you add it to the array?
Okay, the question was, if you have an array and you append a value to it, what happens to the thing you append? Who said you could append anything to an array? An array has a fixed length. You can't append things to it. It's a fixed length. So if you have an array of length 10, you cannot append anything to that. You can assign a variable or assign a value to anything up to the n element, but you can't, or the n minus 1th element, the nth element. But you can't append new things to it. So it's not like a list. Sorry, I shouted there. But it's an important point you raised. Did I answer your question? Good. Okay, arrays are they're easy, they're simple, but you have to kind of accept their constraints. You have to work within their limitations. So I've already said we have to be elements of the same type. Here is where we would have got an array of. So what will, by default, will the elements of this array names be before these statements? Nulls. It'll be five nulls. And here we are assigning new strings to those, to each of those. Now there's, if we've got a case like this, where we've got five names, there's a shorthand syntax which is useful. And this allows us to write on the right-hand side of the statement a kind of shorthand representation of the array with just those elements in it. So this is the same as the previous statement. It just says we've got an array with Rebecca, Isla, Brooke, Megan, and Neav. And same thing with an array of integers or an array of doubles. So this is really convenient if you've only got a small handful of elements to assign. So if you're you may have a bit of code that gets given an array. So an example would be you're reading elements, strings from the command line. So you've got a program that reads command line, puts things into the args parameter of the main method. How many elements is the user going to put in? So supposing you say suppose you write a program that will sum all the integers that the user puts on the command line. How many integers will the user supply? 3, 5, 100? Yeah, you don't know. You don't know until that program executes how many elements are going to be in args. So you need to test how big that array is, and that's what you do with this. So this is kind of, as you, okay, this says find the length of the array A. And this is really annoying syntax because it's not standard with anything else in Java. It's like they thought, how should we write the code for arrays? Oh yes, let's use dot length, calling this method on arrays. But if you have an ordinary object, you have to put parentheses around to do something that calls that method. So this is kind of anomalous. You just have to remember that's how it is. And the other thing that's always tricky to remember is that the last element is the length minus one. So for example, in our previous example, we saw that if we have an array of 5, the last element has index 4. And if you put an array index that's too small or too large, you'll get an error. And it will look like this array index out of bounds exception. So here's another example, just putting things together. We've created this list with a shorthand. We've checked out the length. We've checked out the, we're going to print the second element. And then we're going to print out the last element. Whoops! I made a mistake. So what did I do wrong? You have all the answers. Someone at the back, what did I do wrong? Yes?
You didn't put length minus one.
Very good, yep. And I probably will make that mistake sometimes. So when you see that error, that's a little cue to you that, oh, I forgot to put length minus one. Yeah? Where are we? 38. So, what's the point of this example? This is just another kind of really putting together stuff you've already seen. So this is just an example of how to do dot product. So we've got, so something that you'd think of as a vector is just an array in Java. So here we've got two arrays of 3 elements, x and y. And this is our index. So when the first element is of x is 0.3, 0.6, 0.1, so on for y, we're going to, what we want to do here is we want to loop through the both arrays. Now, in this case, you could say, well, which one should we loop through? Or how do I know which one to loop through? And it's simple here because they're both the same length. So an index that works for x will also work for y. So if x has a value for x sub I, so will y. So we can use the same loop variable here, and we can take, doesn't matter whether we take x's length or y's length, because we know they're the same length. So we could have put y dot length here instead. And notice here we've got less than, because we want to stop at length minus 1. We don't want to actually instantiate I to x dot length, because that would give us an array out of bounds index. So we go up to, but not including, x dot length. So that means we, in particular, we only got to, we know that the length is 3, but we only got to 2 in that Boolean condition here. And then we're just going to increment sum each time by whatever the previous sum was, and the product of x at that index and y at that index. So this sort of addresses the question, I hope, of what happens when you loop through at least one kind of structure, namely an array. So we can go through each of the indices, find out the value of the array at that index, and do something with it. So this is kind of a really prototypical example of looping through an array. So here are some more array processing examples. And like the for loops, these are good little idioms to get familiar with. I'd even go so far as to say that you could pass more or less half the exam if you know how to do these. Yeah. It is specified for you, so it is greater than or equal to 0 and less than 1, and it's a double between that. So if you want to get a random number, let's say an integer, you're going to need to multiply the value of math.random by a bigger number. I think I've got an example later on. Either get to it today or next time. So basically, if you wanted a number between 0 and 4, you'd multiply math.random by 5 and then coerce it to be an integer. So yeah, this will just randomly assign floating point numbers between 0 and 0.9999 to every index of A. There is another way of doing this, which you'll come across later, but at the moment, if you want to print out all the values of an array, you need to loop over it, like this. And one thing I might say is that some of you will know this, but if you have a problem in your, if you have something in your code you're not sure what it comes from, at the moment, the best technique you can have is to add some print statements, which will print out the values of variables. So it's a very primitive debugging technique, but it's quite effective. So if you're doing some looping, your program seems very loopy, you don't know why it's doing what it's doing, you can say, all right, print out the value of I, or print out whatever I'm doing with I each time through the loop, and just see what's happening. Or if you've got an array and you're not sure what's in it, this will allow you to inspect the values of it. This is going to, we start off with, okay, we've got some array. We want to know what its maximum value is. So let's say, let's just guess it's the first element. And each time through the loop, we look at the next element and say, is it bigger than what we currently have? If so, we reset max to the current value. Otherwise, we leave it as it is. Yeah? Do you mean in a case like this?
Or, you know,
if you got something, okay, it's kind of confusing if you think of it as being identity. So max equals max plus one. If you've got a statement like max equals max plus one, before you evaluate that statement, you have a value for max, which you have to have initialized. So let's suppose max starts off being equal to zero. You then have the assignment max equals max plus 1. So the max on the right-hand side is the value of max before you try to evaluate that statement. So it'll be 0. So it'll be 0 plus 1. You take that thing on the right-hand side, and you then say, forget whatever I had in that slot. I'm now going to stick 0 plus 1 in it. So after the evaluation of that statement, you've got one in that slot. Next time round, max is equal to one. So when you try to evaluate max equals max plus one, then max equals, on the right-hand side, equals one. You add another one, so it's two, and then you put two inside the slot called max. So yeah, it works, and it's not logic, it's stuffing values into slots is the way to think about it. I need to stop in a moment. So another example, again, a very useful thing to learn is computing average. So here we keep on incrementing the sum by, so we start off with the, that should be zero, sorry. So we should start off with I equals zero, and then we keep on adding elements in that array. And then at the end, we take the sum, divide it by n, and that gives us the average. This allows us to copy from one array to another. So let's assume we've got B and A, and we keep on going through every element in B and putting the corresponding element of A in it. This is swapping things. Probably the best thing to do is just look at this, not now, but I mean, it's, when you think about it, it makes sense. When you see it at first, it looks a bit incomprehensible, or maybe the first time. So try and work through this with paper and pencil and see if you can figure out what's happening with that. Okay, so I'm going to just, so the stuff here, so way of storing lots of data. It's a bit like using primitive types. We use indexing to get access to elements. I couldn't find anything in the Java notes which is particularly useful. So if you're reading the Cedric and Wayne book, I suggest you look at section 1.4. And I will probably say a bit more about this material probably next week. But you've got enough now to get on with the exercises.
Might make it more clear to, like, in a larger degree, contrast it to how it works in Haskell and how it works here and how it differs and how it's related to themselves.
Yeah, it's slightly tricky because...
Since I think that's the major source of this ambiguity and confused question, so...
Well, it may be this the right question, but I take your point.
Yeah.
There is something called array lists in Java, as you probably know, which
I know that there are dynamic data structures, and I know the differences between Haskell. But I think that's the source of confusion that led to like the append question.
I was just asking because you can append elements to arrays in ColdFusion.
In what?
Okay.
ColdFusion, you can directly append to arrays.
But aren't those arrays more like Haskell lists?
They're dynamic structures because you can actually assign bits from
the
back.
That's the fundamental difference.
Is
Haskell lists are also dynamic structures, but Java lists are more like C lists, and that they are like fixed sized. And
well, the other fundamental thing about Haskell lists is they're recursive, so you can.
Yeah, you fundamental. That might also be nice. Be interesting to like define for loops in Taylor recursion and show like simple translations and stuff. But
I take your point and I appreciate it. Thank you.
In Java, what's the difference of declining something in the main method and between the main class and main method?
Okay, so. There's if you introduce a variable in in a class which isn't a method, then you will get default values. So if you just say is cold. So you have a boolean is cold, which you define outside a method or outside a function, then it will default to false. Now it's regarded as good practice to actually explicitly say what its value is, but you're right, it'll get default value. If you define a variable inside a method, so-called local variable, you have to explicitly initialize it. So I will come to that.
What is the biggest number in double in Java?
I think it's something like, as I recall, it's like 2 × 10⁹.
2 × 10⁹.
My memory for these things is very bad, but that's the kind of number that's sticking in my head.
I'm just asking about this. If you want to find the maximum value, you can find it.
Yeah, yeah, sure you can. Yeah, yeah. I think it's what is it? I mean, there's a constant that you can inspect that, which is double dot max, I think.
And in integer, it's what is the biggest, or it's same with double. Or
it's when I try and put these things in my head, they kind of float out very quickly. So it's the kind of thing I look up rather than remembering. it's roughly what you can get with 64 bits, I guess. Sorry, I can't remember. Sorry, that's such a bad answer.
I was wondering if the notation where you have 4 int I colon